Eric Dawson's Talking Politics and Breaking Down the Issues. Coming to you live from Essex County, New Jersey, this is All Things Political.
Welcome to another episode of All Things Political. Today is May 3rd, 2016. There's a lot to cover. On the list of things to talk about is the fact that there's now going to be a contested convention, both on the Democrat side as well as the Republican side. Bernie Sanders was unequivocal in his comments yesterday, where he said that this thing is going all the way to the convention, and that he believes that going to the convention, he'll be able to provide information to, before we do that, it's just in that Donald Trump is wins Indiana. So, ladies and gentlemen, Donald Trump has just won Indiana, and Cruz comes in second. So, I don't know that there's going to be a contested convention on the GOP side. I think that what we will have is we will have Donald Trump getting to the requisite number of pledged delegates, and there will not be a contested convention on the GOP side. I believe that what's going to happen is there will be a coalescing now around Donald Trump, and there'll be a lot of Republicans eating crow as they seek to try to dress this guy up and present him nationally to run a national campaign against the Democrat, the winner of the Democratic Party, in terms of who's going to be nominated. That's very, very, very shocking. Well, I'm not going to even say shocking news, because, I mean, we saw it. For those who didn't have their heads in the sand, saw exactly what was happening. Donald Trump entered the race last June or July. By September, he was the front runner, and he never lost that position. And it now looks as though he's going to be. Donald Trump, they say, has 1,047 pledged delegates now. And the race between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders at this point is too close to call. And so we'll keep an eye on that. They continue to give Hillary Clinton the superdelegates. So I want to talk about that for a second. Well, and so let me list what's on the docket, and then, because that was breaking news, let me finish going down what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the now contested race on the Democrat side. We're going to talk about the inevitability of Donald Trump being the GOP nominee, as he heads into a battle to become president of the United States. We're going to also talk about the race for governor here in New Jersey, and the heated discussion that took place between reporters and George Norcross as pertains to Jersey City Mayor Stephen Fulop. It was kind of backhanded comment, calling him, stupid or ignorant or something of that nature. But we'll get the actual quote. We're going to also talk about what's going on at the port in Newark. There was a rally yesterday. Mayor Baraka held a rally. The mayor of Elizabeth did not participate in that rally. There are reports of anywhere between 300 and 500 people that attended this rally for more jobs for Newarkers. My question is, what Newarkers? I posted something on my Facebook page that garnered a lot of different kinds of responses. And basically what I said was, I think that we have programs that are designed to focus on prisoner reentry. We have programs that are designed to focus on folks who have made mistakes, but we don't have enough jobs within within the communities, black and brown communities, that focus on strengthening the middle class. The middle class is pretty much ignored. And, you know, and so when you're talking about $100,000 jobs down at the port, and you're talking about middle class or struggling middle class or struggling lower middle class or upper poor class, however you want to classify it, African Americans and brown kids, Latinos who are straddled with college debt because they did the things that we asked them to do. They did well in school. They went on to college and they came back and the job market is tight. It's hard to find a job. Why then are we marching to get folks who may not have done what we asked them to do, who are not strapped with that kind of debt? Or why are we, you know, looking to give them jobs first? So I want to have a conversation about that. And then finally, we have two races in Essex County coming up, or two that I know of, two towns, municipal races in Irvington, municipal races in Orange. In Irvington, we have the race for council, and in Orange, we have the race for council, some council seats, and Mayor Warren finds himself in a heated, I'm looking at the reports. Donald Trump got 55% right now. Well, they say with 11% in, Donald Trump is projected to have over 55% of the votes. So there's a lot that we're going to talk about right now. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a commercial break. And actually, I'm not going to take a break. I'm going to take this. We're going to see if we have someone who can join us for some of these discussions. Hello, caller. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, Eric. This is Eric, man. This is Eric Dixon, guys. I asked him to call in because he's got some insight on what's going on in Irvington. And so as we get into the local races, we're gonna talk about that. Welcome online, Eric. How you doing, man?
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, absolutely, man. I enjoy our off-air conversations. You know, I welcome, you know, your valuable input and insight in what's going on. So, you know, to provide that the listeners with the opportunity to hear what you have to say, I think will be a treat for them today. So listen, man, did you hear breaking news? Donald Trump wins Indiana, man.
No, I was out and about, man. I did hear he was up early, you know, they were trying to, you know, hedge his points, but you know, yeah, he won and I believe he's going to get all the delegates along with it.
Well, yeah, they're projecting he's going to get more than 55% of the vote out of Indiana. That's astounding, man. They're saying he's got 1,037 delegates right now to Ted Cruz, 564. So, I was billing this show to talk about, two contested conventions, but I think there's only going to be one contested convention because I think Donald Trump is going to get the requisite pledged delegates tonight.
I kind of go along with that also, you know, Eric. You know, the whole time this man has been running his campaign and the naysayers and the haters and everybody has been saying he can't win, he can't win, he can't win based on, you know, his personality and based on the things that he says. Obviously, that doesn't mean a hell of a lot in the United States because the man has almost landslid this whole primary process. And, you know, it's just, you know, it's unseemly to me. Because I also was a naysayer in the beginning. You know, I'm not a Republican, but at the end of the day, you know, I did not really foresee this guy taking over the whole Republican Party the way he has and has them fighting him for their votes. It's retarded.
Hey, E, man, we got to get you listening to our show a little more then, man, because we called this thing way, way back in the fall, early fall, man. Just said that... when you looked at the field, you say that that American people had Bush fatigue, right? The son, and now Jeb trying to come. So we really didn't think that Bush was going to be formidable. And then when you looked at the rest of them, I just thought that Chris Christie didn't have enough of a national presence and then was being dogged with what was taking place in New Jersey. So I didn't see him happening. Carly Fiorina, I mean, I think that there's a time in history for a woman to be president, and I think that that's really all she was running on. I mean, because I think if she was a guy, she would have been out a long time sooner, but because she was the only woman running, she kind of hung in. And then the rest of those guys, man, I mean, you never saw them really emerge from the children's table during the debates.
No. What I'm saying is when this started last summer, you know, like actually late spring when they were talking about this and that, and I had a good friend of mine, we always talk politics, and he said, you got to watch out for this guy Trump, man, because he speaks their language, and you know what, they're listening right now. And I said, you want to know what? You know, that may be right and this and that, but I looked at the landslide capability of Hillary Clinton. I really didn't even see Bernie coming in at that time. And then once Bernie did get into the race and started to catch fire, you know, I went with his line of politics other than what was out there, you know, Trump included. But he did say, he's like, look, man, this guy, again, he's from Wall Street, he speaks their language, and that's what they want to hear. They want someone who's perceived as being strong, which he doesn't really seem to be all that strong, more idiotic to me, you know, than anything based on the things that comes out of his mouth. But to me, it just seems like it's the right time for them, or, you know, those super conservatives or whatever you want to call them, the other side, to say, you know, this is our guy and we don't care what he's about, we're going to back him. And, you know, that's happened a whole lot in United States history as far as electing presidents go.
Yeah. You know, and so you did just talk about Bernie Sanders, man. You know, and Bernie last night on Rachel Maddow, and I was trying to get the audio clip to play it because I got a beef with Rachel Maddow now, but on Rachel Maddow's show, Bernie Sanders talked about the fact that he was taking it all the way to the convention. He said, look, you guys are trying to strife within, you know, within my campaign, and so once and for all, I'm telling you, I'm not getting out of the race. You guys can stop talking about me getting out of the race. You can stop talking about the fact that this is a scam and I'm taking money from, you know, from voters. And I'm going all the way to the convention. I'm giving everybody who donated $27.50 to my campaign an opportunity to vote for me. That's what I'm doing. And when I get to the convention, I'm going to lay down some facts for him, for the superdelegates. Part of what you just said earlier, Eric, which is, you know, it took a while for Bernie Sanders to catch on fire. Bernie Sanders was a senator from Vermont, right? So nobody really knew Bernie Sanders. And Hillary Clinton, who had national notoriety, having been the first lady for 8 years, having been the senator from New York for a term, and then having served as Secretary of State, and having run for president back in 2008. So Hillary Clinton, the groundwork had been laid for her in her national spotlight. Bernie Sanders, correct, not so much. And what are your thoughts in terms of whether the closed primaries were helpful or hurtful to his campaign?
I think they were hurtful to him, you know, mainly because of what you just said. The infrastructure for her campaign was laid, and we all know party politics rule when it comes to these big, national elections. So when you look at the caucuses, you know, where he's won, what is 98% of them, I believe, if not all of them, you know, you look at the caucuses, he's done better in the caucuses, and they're not counting most of those delegates, which I was watching Rachel Maddow the other night when his wife was on there, and basically saying that, you know, at the end of the day, he is losing in the overall vote, but what it really comes down to is those super delegates that they just automatically want to push on Hillary, where she hasn't truly, truly earned them. They haven't even been in position to be tabulated to that level yet, so just count what she's actually won in the race, you know, per se, with Bernie. She's up 200 and some odd, which could be closed down and keep her from getting the requisite number to be able to, you know, out and out say that she will be the nominee. So if he can keep her, in my opinion, from actually reaching that requisite number, then I believe that he should fight for that nomination, because there are millions and millions of people out there that are, you know, buying his line and agrees with what he says.
Well, so this is my deal with Rachel Maddow and those guys, right? I mean, perfect segue, Eric. Last night I'm watching, and if you go on my Facebook page, you'll see the video. I took the video with my iPhone in the dark because my fiance was asleep, so I didn't want to turn the light on and I didn't want to turn TV on. So it's a little, you know, it's hard to hear, but you could listen to it. She actually admits that Hillary Clinton will not reach the requisite number of pledged delegates before the convention. She said that.
Mm-hmm.
So where the mainstream media kept trying to paint Hillary Clinton as the inevitable nominee, where
right.
they kept saying to Bernie Sanders that he should get out of the race, where at every turn they tried to make the victories of Hillary Clinton landslide victories that meant
right.
that he had no hope, they all knew that Bernie Sanders would be able to keep Hillary Clinton from reaching the requisite number of pledged delegates. And
right.
so they have all been complicit, Eric, in trying to stop his fundraising by calling it a fraud, right? By stopping his fundraising by not televising the massive rallies that he's held, right? They've tried every way they can to stop this man's campaign. Well, and I'm not even going to say the man's campaign. I'm going to say the people's campaign. Because
right.
if you did not have these closed primaries, and I'm going to use New York as a perfect example, where
mm-hmm.
you would have had to have changed your voting status back in October in
Correct.
Order to vote for Bernie Sanders as an independent, over 3 million voters were unable to cast their vote. And so
well, see, that's why he went Democratic.
Right. How do you call this true democracy? And so I believe that the argument that Bernie Sanders is going to make, or if I was there at the convention, the argument that I would make to
mm-hmm.
the superdelegates is, look, the primary is not like the general election. One,
right.
all of the southern states that you all were so happy to see Hillary win, those are all red states. So we as Democrats,
yeah.
none of those are going to be in play for us in the general
election. Not really.
Right? Secondly,
right.
but because of the closed primary, yes, you painted this facade of Hillary Clinton being inevitable. But the reality is, if you look at the number of independents who wanted to vote for me, those independents will be available during the general election. Right. And so I have, meaning Bernie Sanders, a better chance of swaying those independents than does Donald Trump. And so, or Hillary Clinton for that matter. And so
mm-hmm.
if you know, and look, I think that the party bosses and the machine is going to have to think
right.
really hard about whether or not they want to possibly sacrifice the White House at this point.
My point is, that's right, because if you really look at it, who's going to be most affected if this man doesn't win? And that's like you just said. It's going to be the independents. They need the independents because they lack the black vote. They lack the woman vote. They lack the gay and lesbian community. They lack all of those. They lack the Latinos. So, you know, who are they going to go to try to procure enough votes to win in the general election under these circumstances. So that's what they're doing.
Dude, it's going to be bananas. It's going to be bananas,
so,
man. So I'm waiting to see now. How long do you think it's going to take before Republicans begin to coalesce around Donald Trump in a real way, looking at him as the presumptive nominee?
They're gonna coalesce as soon as he gets the requisite number, because that's you're gonna have to drag most of them, so it seems, over the line to support him. Because you even have a candidate, you know, who made a public, you know, assertion that I'm going to support the nominee. Now, you just asked that question on yesterday. Will you support Donald Trump if he gets the requisite number? Will you support him? 9 times? He refused to answer the question, saying that he's going to beat them. They're going to take it to, you know, a fight at the convention, so on and so forth. But at the end of the day, I don't think he has a snowball chance in hell of actually getting that off. I mean, he's doing a decent job, I think, in wrangling delegates, you know, at the state level prior to the convention. But, you know, they have an obligation to vote for the highest vote getter and the one with the most delegates at the time when that convention convenes. So that's going to be Donald Trump. You know, I mean, you know, no two ways about it. Who's going to beat him? Kasich doesn't really have a shot. He's not going to be able to wrangle the delegates. And actually, they hate this guy Cruz so much, and he does have like a paper plastic persona that, you know, you just don't believe. And, you know, I just see the people that are following Trump are following him because he's a brand, he's been a brand in their household forever, and they like the fact that he speaks straight. You know, I think it's, you know, it's beneath, you know, the office for a person, you know, an individual to stand and recite the things and say the things that he says, but, you know, I'm not a billionaire, and I'm not running for president. So if it worked for him, I guess he might as well continue to do it. But I totally believe that will hurt him in the general election against anybody that he runs against, especially somebody like Bernie, because, you know, Bernie's going to call him on all of his past stuff, you know, and you can see that he has the ability to do it because he's really, you know, played with kid gloves, if you ask me, with Hillary. For what reason, I don't know. You know, maybe it's because she's a woman and he don't want to, you know, be, you know, called a masochist or whatever the case may be, but, you know, he's really, really dealt with her fairly in this process, and she really has been unfair to him in the process because the things that she brings up about him, you know, as far as, you know, his candor and his abilities are, you know, they're insulting, to say the least, you know, especially for somebody running for president. So I think that Hillary's going to have a hard way to go, and it's going to come down to the last minute. And let's hope that Bernie wins. I mean, I think he has a really strong shot.
All right. So listen, what we're going to do is we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about did you read the article in the paper? I think it was in Politico, where Norah Cross kind of backhanded Fulop for some comments that Steve Fulop made. And
I didn't get to see that.
Yeah, man. And he actually, you know, he came very close to just calling the guy stupid.
He's a candidate for governor, right?
Fulop is a candidate for governor, but, you know, part of the challenge is going to be that you have to be able to win the South. And,
right.
You know, you got George Norcross down there in South Jersey calling you a dummy. I'm not sure how you're going to get that done if you do that. But what I'm going to do is during a break, I'm going to try to find a quote. I'm going to give you the quote, and then we'll talk about what your thoughts are about the governor's race. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
Fantastic.
If you're a business owner and you have safety or loss prevention concerns, contact BBSI today. We provide you with both armed and unarmed guards, as well as other security solutions to keep persons and property safe from harm. BBSI can also investigate and let you know if a significant other is cheating on you. BBSI is the premier industry service provider with active and retired law enforcement trained personnel ready to get you answers. Mention Eric and Osmond, Real Talk Radio, when you call and get a free consultation for services. Call 1-800-493-1859 or visit our website at bbsillc.com. That's bbsillc.com today. BBSI, the detective agency you can trust.
Welcome back to All Things Political. Today is May 3rd, and we're having discussions about the national, state, local politics and issues. And I'm joined by Eric Dixon, and the insight that is helping provide is amazing. I'm enjoying the energy. So, Eric, the article in Politico, it's in the news section, it says, Norcross says Fulop making a fool of himself, right? And it says it says embroiled in Atlantic City crisis, George Norcross today struck back at Jersey City Mayor Steve Fulop, who this morning swung at Norcross at the South Ward, New Jersey Democratic leader's connection to Republican Governor Chris Christie. And this is the quote from Norcross. He says, I don't have, well, he says some things about the thing, and he says, I don't have much else to say about Mayor Fulop's release. My father always told me never to interrupt someone making a fool out of themselves.
Wow. Hey, this is politics is a compact sport, bro.
Yo, but wait a minute. I'm gonna read a little further, right? So he goes, but it is important to note that the mayor, meaning Fuller, did not always have a negative impression of me. He has repeatedly sought my advice and support, including just a few months ago when he traveled 2 hours to my office in South Jersey and begged for my support for governor. I respectfully declined, but perhaps that rejection is behind today's unhinged statement. Damn!
Well, I guess he's not trying to hide nothing. You know, and look, like I said, politics is a contact sport, man. And if somebody, you ask them for support, they don't give you support, then you either got to go around them or over them, or under them, or whatever you got to do to get your job done. You know, I believe it's 4 people running, you know, for governor. And in Irvington, we've had the ability to meet each one of these gentlemen, you know, at meetings that they came in, you know, and they're vying for our support. And, you know, they all have something interesting to say. At the end of the day, I just, you know, anybody to me is better than Chris Christie, you know. And I'll, you know, I'll leave that right there. You know, the way that he, you know, our community, you know, overall has suffered, you know, since he has been, you know, our governor is, you know, it's astounding to me. And it's just like he had no empathy, no sympathy for anything that's going on in the community that I'm from. And, you know, he's really lost support, even amongst the people who elected him in office, you know. And I think that, you know, while this is election time, it's a great time to say, you know, don't, you know, let down, just like even in the national elections. Don't let down, because when we got Barack, you know, we didn't go out and we didn't vote for these senators and we didn't vote for these congresspeople and we didn't vote for these people, you know, that needs to be the supporting cast of the person who's actually overall running the whole show. So even when we break it back down to New Jersey, you know, if whoever's governor, you know, we need to have those lower races and those lower offices, you know, filled with people that think the way and that are willing to do the things that we need to do in our community. And that's one thing as a black community, I really, really don't like. You know, we go out when it's fashionable to go out and vote, but we don't go out when the meat and potatoes time to come and vote to make sure that, you know, our interests are, you know, taken care of. So, you know, I'll leave that right there. But, you know, getting back to, you know, the governor's race as it stands right now, anybody's better than Christie. And, you know, I think that Philip, you know, has a, you know, he has the personality. You know, he looks like he can do the job, and he's doing a pretty good job in Jersey City, you know, from everything that I read for the most part. And, you know, I think he has the right to go ahead on and throw his hat in the ring if he wants, you know, just like any of the other gentlemen that, you know, plan on running.
There we go. All right, man. So, listen, now getting a little closer to home, we've got, well, I'm sure you heard about the rally that took place yesterday, or the march on the port, led by Baraka. And I posted something on my wall, man.
Yeah,
I got some love, I got some heat too. Right. You know, but I posted on my wall. I don't have my Facebook page up, but it kind of, the first statement was really asking, you know, who was the mayor fighting for? You know, he said that he was going to fight for jobs. And I said, for who? You know,
right.
And, you know, and I got a tremendous amount of heat from that. But, you know, I was being very serious. You know, part of my concern, and let me know if you think that I'm on base. But part of my concern, Eric, is we have a lot of programs that are designed for prisoner reentry, that are designed for people who have gone wayward in our community. And I don't see the same level of zeal in creating programs that support the folks who do the things that we ask them to do, right? So
right.
We tell our kids to go to school to obey the law, not get in trouble, don't go to jail, and, you know, get good grades, be respectful. And so when we have those people who do those things in our community, and then they come back, and then there's nowhere for them to work in the community, right?
Right.
No jobs for them in the community. And then they look and say, well, maybe I'll go get a gig in New York, or maybe I'll go get a gig somewhere else. And then they go get that job, and they say, you know what? I don't want that commute, so I'm going to move to where it is I got that great job, right?
Right.
You know, because I have my student loans to pay. I want to have a family. You know, I want to be a part of the successful middle class in this country. And then you have the mayor who says, okay, we've got these $100,000 jobs down at the port.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to try to get jobs for who? And that's the only question I asked. So I pulled up my thing, and I want you to weigh in. I said, who's Rasmussen fighting for? Is he fighting for the college grad to get these jobs, or is he fighting to hook folks up?
Mm-hmm.
Yorkers do need jobs, but let's start with those who have traveled the straight and narrow. Let's employ those who have treated our community and its residents with respect. I, for one, would like to see the list of Yorkers Mayor Ras Baraka is fighting so hard for. What's wrong with that statement?
I don't think there's anything wrong with that statement. You know, at the end of the day, let me say this first. I believe that if you help destroy your community, that you it's incumbent on you to also help rebuild that community. In order for you to help rebuild that community, you have to be a stand-up individual, the error in your ways, and find ways to try to extricate yourself from the situation that you created for yourself, for the most part. Now, you know, I don't knock nobody for trying to go out and support their family, even when they did wrong, because nobody's perfect and everybody makes mistakes. And, you know, you do get an opportunity, I believe, in a society once you have, you know, gone in and served your time and paid the debt to society to try to restart your life. I have no problem with that. But I do have an issue with, you know, like you said, there's some people out there that went to college, paid their debt. You know, they're sitting around in their mother's house or their aunt's house or whatever because, you know, they can't find a job, you know, and they've never been to jail or, you know, they keep their license up to date, so on and so forth, to be able to go out and find a, you know, a high-paying job. And you know, I think that there should be something for those individuals also because, you know, government money, you know, really comes from people having problems, you know. So when you look at a reentry program, there's money being, you know, thrown from the state and from the federal government to be able to help support these programs. You know, they, I guess, feel like, you know, these individuals on the other side here that are walking the straight line, you know, don't need it. But, you know, it's incumbent on that community also to be able to develop these institutions to be able to help their citizens. You know, so I agree with, you know, the sentiment on, you know, Mayor Baraka saying, you know, look, you know, I want to employ these individuals, you know, even though they've helped destroy this community, but, you know, they're here now today fessing up to it, and they're trying to be, you know, protective parts of the community. I think there should be a mix. You know, you can't just throw all the people that, you know, had these issues, you know, at them at the same time. Why not mix in 50-50, 75-40, you know, 60-40, or whatever the case may be, so that everybody has an equal opportunity to be able to you take advantage of the initiative that, you know, you're putting forth, and rightfully so. You know,
right.
I would go at it from that point of view. You know, I just don't see where, you know, you're just going to placate to one constituency and negate the other. You know, that's, you know, racism in a way, if you really want to put it like that, because what about the day when, you know, we were redlined and blackballed and so on and so forth, and we were just as capable as anybody else in the society to be able to do X, Y, Z and work? Actually, we probably were better because, you know, of our history here in this country. But, you know, I don't like the fact that it's just for that one constituency. I would like to see a broader brushstroke, you know, when it comes to getting people involved in a public movement like that.
And then here's the other issue. You know, I was talking to some folks down at the port today, and they were saying that they said that a lot of the workers that work down at the port, not all of them, but they said more than the mayor or the media wants to talk about, started off as Norkers, right? But then when they started making $100,000, $120,000, $130,000, $140,000 a year, they said, "Why am I still living in Newark?" They said, "I could buy a house down South Jersey for cheaper, right? Or I could buy a house up west, up 78, you know, nice piece of land in Lebanon. And, you know, yeah, my commute is going to be something. But, you know, when I get home, I got an acre and a half to be able to sit on a deck and look at and watch the
Right. You see the value of your lifestyle change. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
You know, but then again, even like you want to break, you're talking about, no, you want to break it down to Irvington. You know, Irvington is only 2.2 square miles. You know, it's not no big sprawling town. It's like actually smaller than the South Ward, if you really want, you know, get a comparison. And, you know, it's tree lined and it's one of those old quaint communities that's been around for a long time. It used to be called Camp Town. But, you know, it's been deteriorating over a period of time to where, you know, now people don't look at it as that quaint little community no more. Now, it's the hole in the wall. You know, strides have been made, you know, recently, you know, to be able to change that, the persona of Irvington. But, you know, for a long time, you know, maybe a 15-year stretch, you know, Irvington was being hit pretty hard with violent crime and, you know, drug issues, open-air drug markets and, you know, the like, you know, the quality of schools had went down at one point to where, you know, it was not worth buying property in the town. And that's the other issue. You know, when people go into a community, they look at a couple of things. You know, is the school district any big? Is the police department anywhere? You know, if those two things are prerequisites for most people that are, you know, going to put $250,000 of debt down in their name or cash or whatever it is that they want to buy their property with. You know, so when people look at Irvington or they look at certain parts of Newark, you know, they're looking at those issues. You know, your school system isn't up to speed or, you know, you can't walk out the door to go to school and grandma can't sit out on the porch in the summertime and in a rocking chair. That's a problem for most people. And they won't buy property. Now, they're investing property there. You know, you have individuals that will come into your property and profiteer off of the community, you know, don't live here, pay a little taxes and keep it moving, but they really aren't interested in the quality of life in that township. So, you know, it's a catch-22 when you talk about, you know, helping the township and then really, really looking at what's going on in the world, you know, around your community.
Yeah. So, I mean, but how do you continue to, if you're not building up, and then I want to move into Irvington politics, and I want to talk about the great job that Mayor Tony Voss is doing there, or at least my opinion of it. But you know, you have to be able. You have to create an environment where people who have the financial wherewithal to leave don't want to leave, right?
Right.
In some cases, you have people who are living there because they can't go anywhere else, right? They don't have the money to go anywhere else. The trick is to create a community where people who do have the money to go somewhere else, they're choosing to be here as opposed to relegating.
Being stuck.
You know,
yeah, they're being stuck.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people are stuck. You know, they can't move because either financial or either mostly financial, you know. But if you look at it, the foreclosure problem that's going on in New Jersey, you know, Essex County particularly, you know, has been, you know, a raging problem for several years, you know, to where people are just walking away from the properties because they're underwater and the properties are really overvalued, you know, based on the citizenry that live there and their earning power. You know, and you really got to look at it. Say a small town like Irvington, you know, doesn't really compare to a city like Newark, wherein, you know, you really, really, really have to have all your lots procured. You really have to, you know, take advantage of every single thing that you have so that, you know, this little 2.2 square miles, you know, can take care of the 50,000 people that live here. You know, there's an overpopulation problem in Irvington that's been a while, but I think we're doing a good job with it, you know, but still at the same time, it doesn't compare. When we're talking about, you can go to the north side of Newark, and they have tree-lined streets, and the crime level is low on that side. Or you can go down in the neck, and they have a sprawling business district. And their houses, while they old housing stock, you know, they're not dilapidated and run down. You know, or the East Ward, so on and so forth. You know, I was raised primarily, you know, when we were in Newark, you know, until I was 9 years old, in the Leek Wake section. And I remember the weekweek section being, you know, prime real estate. People were clamoring to get into there. You know, even though the school system was going, you know, it was having, you know, some turmoil there in the early 70s, you know, still people weren't trying to just leave New York. We had black businesses. We had, you know, everything in our community, represented and was a reflection of, you know, our community as, you know, a populace. And you don't see that today. You know, I don't have anything against, you know, per se, you know, the Indians that are here doing business or, you know, the Latinos that are here doing business in the township that don't live here, so on and so forth. But you really have to look. There was a Mr. Wilson's on Renner Avenue, you know, when I was a kid, you know. There was a, you know, Andy Mays on a corner of, There was Andy Mays right there on the corner of Shepherd, you
oh,
know.
Shepherd,
and they were all black businesses.
Yeah, man.
That isn't the paradigm in our community anymore. You know, it's everybody else, you know, and, you know, you really have to look at that and say, well, damn, what the heck happened to where, you know, we went from being almost a self-contained community because we were being ostracized to now, you know, we don't own most of the property, we don't own most of the businesses, and that's just not in Newark. That's in Irvington, that's in East Orange, that's in, you know, a whole lot of places right here close in Essex County. You know, and I think it's a problem to where we don't get funded properly for schools because we don't own property. We don't get equal protection from the police, you know, because we don't own property. What's their job? They're here to protect and serve. Protect and serve who? People who own property. You know, they're the ones who paying their bills, so that's who they're going to placate to. You know, it's a lot that goes on in our community, and, you know, we look at, you know, our politicians, and, you know, they're out there with their causes, so on and so forth, but how do you fix a community when you don't look at the base reasons why things are going on wrong in the community and try to fix that so that the other things, you know, that you're trying to do could be easily accomplished?
Well,
you know, and that's where I'm at with that.
So now let's again, perfect segue into Irvington. About a month ago, I had an interview with the mayor and some of the folks who are running for council seats. And that election is next Tuesday. And the mayor, talked about all of these things. Well, actually, I went to the State of the Township address where the mayor said that, you know, his focus. And, you know, and this is very interesting, man. And I've seen it happening in Irvington that he talked about one team, one dream.
Right.
And a lot of campaigns have slogans. It's the difference between a slogan and a brand, right? A brand is something that you internalize. So, and I'm saying this having been a brand manager and a branding agent for 20 years of my career. And when I go and I talk to companies about branding, I said, you know, you can pick a bunch of really clever words and phrases and stuff, but if it's not something that you're prepared to live by, right, and prepared to have people who on the external are, you know, are relating to the brand in the way that you're defining it. If that's not happening, then it's a waste of time, right? If you say that you are, I'll give you a perfect example, man, and I'm sorry to trash on TD Bank, but when TD Bank used to be Commerce Bank, they said the most convenient bank in America, right? And it was. I mean, dude, I would go into TD Bank, I mean, into Commerce Bank. I was never standing in line. Everybody was very helpful. You know,
right.
You always had pens on the counter. You always had the thing filled with the
lollipops, all that. Yeah.
All of it. Right? When it became TD Bank, man, it became a nightmare. It became a nightmare. But they kept the slogan on the wall. And I'm saying to myself, as I'm standing in a line of 30 people, no, you're not the most convenient bank in America anymore, right? So if you're going to be the most convenient, then ask all of these 30 people in this line, are you the most convenient bank, and see what they say. So Tony Voss, who says one team, one dream, Irvington strong, when I listen to the different council people and the other folks in the community who are working or the other directors and folks in City Hall, it is a different City Hall. It's a different City Hall than when Mayor Wayne Smith was there, I walk in there, man, and people are smiling, and they're walking with a pep in their step. There's this sense of pride and accomplishment, you know. Mm-hmm. And what we have now is on May 3rd, there are zero murders in Irvington.
Zero.
Murders in Irvington. And nobody...
In 2016.
In 2016. And here's the shame of it. Nobody's talking about it. Politic is not talking about it. Channel 2 News isn't in Irvington talking about it. Channel 7 is not talking about it. But let something tragic happen, and all of the cameras and all of the helicopters will be there. You know?
Right.
And the community needs to become outraged. And they need to go into the streets, much like we do when things go bad. We need to pour into the streets and celebrate when things are good. The other thing that Mayor Voss talked about when I interviewed him was he talked about $700,000 of revenue that had been gained as a result of ticket writing. And so not putting the tax, not burdening homeowners with higher taxes, but looking at alternative sources of revenue. And when he said $700,000, Eric, I was astonished, man. And I'm going to say this one more thing, and I'm going to let you talk about your Irvington. The last thing that he said to me, and I asked the candidates who are running in orange, he said, Eric, you know what we're doing also? He said, with regard to our houses, we're bulldozing these houses. He said, but we realized that if we bought our own equipment, we could save $50,000 on each demolition. So we're demolishing these houses ourselves instead of bringing in an outside vendor. He said, and then you know what? We're turning around and we're going to sell the houses. We're getting in the real estate market. So we're going to fix the houses up and we're going to sell the houses for additional revenue. I'm impressed.
So you like the fact that these are alternative things that typical councils and typical administrations don't really look at. And when they're trying to raise revenue, you know, they really just think that, okay, all we can do is we can raise, you know, 2 cents on each owner and we can raise X amount of dollars and, you know, that's how we pay for it. But that doesn't make a self-contained community. You know, one example that I always like to bring out to people is Black Wall Street. Now, Black Wall Street, you know, was a late 18th, early 19th century township out in Oklahoma, Tulsa, Oklahoma, where the first race riot occurred, where this was a totally black town. It had their own millionaires. They had their own butcher, their own baker, their own candlestick maker, their own train company, their own bus company. All of this was all owned by black folks. And, you know, we know the tragic story on how it was besieged and how it was starved and how it was pretty much, you know, taken out of existence, you know, by the racist entities that were around that city. But, you know, if you look at Irvington, you look at a totally black council. I take a little pride in that. You know, not that I'm a racist or anything, you know, like that, but I take a little pride in the fact that every one of our council members are African American or of Caribbean descent. You know, from the council president on down to the last elected individual. A mayor obviously is a black person, and Irvington has been like that for a little while. Now, while we've had issues and problems, you know, based beyond, you know, because of that, you know, I think that a lot of progress has been made when this new administration came into being. And, you know, mainly for the fact that he wasn't, you know, divisive and he wasn't, you know, not to, you know, besmudge anybody or say anything about anybody, but he was really willing to work with everybody that was willing to do something good for Irvington. And me being one of those individuals, because, you know, I ran in a race against him, you know, for the council slot. You know, yeah, they won, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, he came to me and he said, you know, Mr. Dixon, you do stuff in the community. I want you to continue to do that and I want to help you. You know, that's the type of personality in a small town like this or even in a large town, you know, that you need to be a leader. And that's what I consider that individual. I consider Mayor Tony Voss a leader, you know, right here in Irvington along with his council. Now, one thing he also likes to say a lot is you look at some of these other council races that are cropping up around Essex County that's going to be going out next week. You know, you got council members that want to be mayor. You got, you know, business administrators that want to be council people. All, you know, all this mishmash is going on. That's not happening in Irvington. And I believe that's part and parcel on one of the reasons why, you know, this administration over the last 19 months has been very successful because they're all on the same page. They all want to accomplish the same thing. They're all, you know, have their own ways of doing it, but they're putting it their effort to task to be able to make sure that it is one team and one dream. And that Irvington, you know, is the ultimate recipient or beneficiary of their actions, along with you know, how they get the community to interact. For instance, you know, I was out with the mayor and the council this weekend for Earth Day. You know, one of the businesses in town, namely McDonald's, you know, they planted plants and stuff on their property, had free ice cream for the kids, and the mayor took out of his time. You know, this is campaign time. You know, this is time when, you know, you're running out grubbing money and you're doing this and you're doing X, Y, Z. But to come and, you know, help the kids plant flowers, you know, at McDonald's, one of the neighborhood businesses, one of the staple businesses in the community. You know, that's what we needed that was sorely missed. You know, a person that's willing to be a cheerleader for our town. And the fact that we have zero murders in a town where, you know, for several years, maybe even over the last almost 20 years, you know, we average 25, sometimes even close to 30 murders a year. A couple times went over that. You know, and for us to, you know, have a new task force, crime task force in town, and have the state police, you know, with a barracks here in town, and have a relationship with the, you know, Federal Bureau of Investigations here in town. You know, I call that, you know, one of the reasons why, you know, this township crime has, you know, precipitously dropped. I think it's somewhere like 83%, you know, in violent crimes and shootings have, you know, been the case here over, you know, our first quarter of this year. So, you know, I give a kudos to all of those individuals, and that's why I'm supporting, you know, Team Strong in the election next week. You know, Paul Inman, he's the East Ward councilman, doing a great job over there. You know, you got Bernie Cox, you know, new guy, doing a great job in the West Ward. And when you have David Lyons and Sandra Jones, who, you know, are veterans, you know, of that council, you know, through at least two administrations, you know, you have a well-rounded group of individuals, again, that are on the same page and that are really trying to accomplish something positive for the township of Irvington. You know, you talk about buying equipment. Yeah, bulldozers, bobcats. When I grew up in Irvington, we had our own garbage company. I'm not sure about Newark, you know, from me thinking right now, but we had our own garbage company where people from the township worked and they created a pension for themselves. And, you know, after working periods of time, we don't have that anymore. We outsource that work now. You know, they say to save money, I'm not sure, you know, but, you know, it's stuff like that. And he brought back this year, going out door to door, you know, as the mayor, giving, you know, needy kids, you know, toys. That wasn't going on, you know, when the last administration was here. But when I was a kid in Irvington, they did that, you know.
Right.
So I see where they're trying to, you know, build bridges to the past, but also, you know, have a forward-looking perspective for the future.
Well, you know what? Speaking of forward perspectives, we have joining us now Jeff Wingfield, who is running in Orange. You know, their race is on Tuesday as well, and he's part of the Move Orange Forward team in Orange with Mayor Warren. And much like some of the things you talked about just now, Eric, you know, I was looking at some of the work that's been done in Orange, and I'll let Jeff talk about this. But the library reopening. They're going to have a groundbreaking, I think, at the end of this week or this weekend for a previously defunct Y, which is going to become a rec center for the community. There have been some tremendous work done in reviving parks and athletic fields and such. So, you know, a lot of that stuff seems to be happening in Orange, too. Welcome to the show, Jeff. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me, Eric. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I agree 100%. I'm supportive of Mayor Dwayne Warren. We need to reelect him for Mayor Warren. He's qualified, he's experienced, and over the last 4 years, he showed tremendous leadership here in the city of Orange. And despite all that, we have a tremendous election going on with slander I have never seen before.
I've seen some of the stuff that's been
it's crazy. We have candidates who want to do more slandering and throwing mud than actually talk about the issues.
That's the biggest issue here in Orange, and we're such a small town, and I just can't wait until May 11th when it's all over. But I have to give Mayor Dwayne Warren a lot of credit. He's improved a lot of the recreational centers here in Orange. And I hope to, once elected to the as councilman at large here in Orange, I hope to help him provide more emergency and health services to the city and reduce the crime rate. And that's what he's looking to do.
Okay. Well, we got a lot of stuff going on, man. And, what I hope is, I think platforms, along with the work that you guys are doing, and I do my best to promote great work and to hold elected officials accountable where they're not doing great work, because I think that that's needed in our communities. And, I wish all of, all of the folks, certainly the Tony Voss team, Team Irvington, I wish them well. I have nothing but good things to say about what's happening in Irvington, Eric. Please give the my best and wish them well. Know if there's anything.
Good luck.
Now and then. Just give a holler. I'm happy to advocate for him in any of the channels that, that we're operating. Oz and I are doing our Real Talk radio show tomorrow. If he or any of the council folks would like to come on and talk about the election, I think it's important. We have the show on Thursday, but that's really a show about school matters. But if there's something that they want to talk about regarding the schools in Irvington, they're welcome to do that. And then, Jeff, you guys in Orange, man, I've seen the mudslinging, I've seen the name calling. I think the one thing in, and I got to tell you, the one thing in Orange that really got to me was this whole idea that because a mayor is willing to work across party lines to bring resources to a community that desperately needs them, especially after a horrific incident like Superstorm Sandy, that you criticize the person and, you try to label him, in a way that appeals to the most base, I don't know if I want to call it a hate group.
Eric, I have to tell you, that's one thing I've seen and I've heard walking door to door here in Orange. The concern and the twistedness of it all. Dwayne Warren is someone who's qualified, experienced, has the knowledge. He's a lawyer. He is one, and I don't think any other candidate could do what he did. He stormed down to Trenton and said, give my people money. There's money that the formula used to educate our kids here have been taken away from us. Dwayne Warren went down there and fought for it. He's a lawyer. He can convince and face Chris Christie in troubling times like this. Any other candidate, I don't think, has the ability or the knowledge to do what he did. And yet they turned it around and twisted it and said he supported the governor. I know he's not a popular guy. I wouldn't vote for him. I haven't voted for him and will never vote for him. I want him out of office, the governor. But you got to do what you got to do for the constituents and the people of the city in which you are leading. And that's what Dwayne did. He got $2.5 million to get this rec center up here. We don't have to pay it back. He went and got money, free money, that the constituents of this city will not have to pay taxes on, do not have to pay back. They don't have to come out of their pocket to make sure our kids here in the city has a viable place to work, to recreate and play games and socialize.
Listen,
I have to give Dwayne.
No, go ahead. You want to, last thought?
I have to give Dwayne credit, much credit. And it's a lot of convincing out there, trying to convince people to see it the way it actually is.
All right. Well, I want
to No matter who's governor, Democrat or Republican, you have to go down there and get your money that you need.
You got to get the money, man. Go get the money.
Yep,
show me
that's
the
what it's about.
That's it, right?
Absolutely. Unless the taxpayers want to pay more taxes. I don't know. Do you want to pay more taxes, or do you want to go down there and demand the free money that we deserve?
Oh, no, I think you're paying enough to get on that train.
Election Day is May 10th. We're out of time for this episode of All Things Political. Get out and vote, people. Get out and vote.
Out and vote. Thank you, Eric.
Vote.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Eric Dawson talking politics and breaking down the issues. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. for All Things Political.